Standing at the foot of Zobel Tower, Wayne watched Wax and Steris disappear into the mists. He shook his head, then took a ball of gum from the tin in his pocket. He'd gotten himself some of the stuff. It was actually fun to chew. He popped it into his mouth and thought about what a rusted fool his friend was. Obviously, Wax persisted with this whole engagement to Steris mess because he missed Lessie so much. So Wax had chosen a marriage that demanded no emotional investment. That was easy to see as the bottom of your own glass at a pub with watered-down ale. Wayne held out his hand to help Marisie down from their coach.
You look nice. I'm surprised you agreed to wear that.
Wayne glanced down at his sharply tailored suit. Marisie acted amazed that he had a suit, matched by a fancy bowler on his head and a dark green cravat. Why wouldn't he have a costume like this? He had beggar costumes, constable costumes, and old lady costumes. A fellow needed to be able to blend with his surroundings. In the roughs, that meant having some pale brown cowhand's costume. In the city, that meant having a fancy twit costume. The stupid line was so long that aluminum could have rusted in the time it took them to reach the halfway point.
Rust and wax in his cheating ways.
The man could have at least taken Wayne instead of Steris. Up ahead, oddly, a couple was turned away, forced to trudge back toward their carriage despite all the waiting. What's going on up there? Fancy people like this didn't get turned away from parties, did they? Everyone had an invitation, even if his was forged. It was just like the one he'd given to the old tyrant at the school, though. Well, no telling until they arrived. And this line was still moving slow.
That fella you caught, ever say anything useful?
No. He isn't all there, mentally. We did find what seems to be a hemallergic spike in him, though.
Rusts. You know about that, too?
I got to read the book. Death did give it to me first, and Waxillium let me make a copy. Our captive had a piercing on some skin on his chest. After we removed that, he calmed, but he still won't talk.
Eventually, after 7 crop rotations or so, they reached the front of the line. Marisie presented their invitation. The bouncer here looked it over.
I'm afraid that we've been ordered to deny any nameless invitations not in the possession of people they were sent to. With the attempt on the governor's life, only guests named on our list can be allowed in.
Bear
now. Important people. Don't you see how fancy my cravat is?
Near the door, men in black coats stepped forward, threatening. Rusting government security. Constables, they were real people. Oh, they might bust a man's neck now and then, but they came from the streets, same as anyone. These spooks, though, they barely had any soul to them.
I saved the governor's life today. Surely you won't turn me away.
There's nothing I can do, I'm afraid.
Yeah, something was going on here. Wayne grabbed Marisie's arm, towing her aside.
Let's go, rusting fools.
But...
At the right moment, Wayne tossed up a speed bubble.
Alrighty then, new plan.
You sound excited.
Marisie glanced at the borders of the speed bubble. It was more distinct than usual, as the mist inside the bubble continued to shift and move while that outside hung frozen in the air like gauze.
I'm an excitable type.
Wayne hurried back to the lectern where the bouncer stood. Wayne had managed to catch the lectern in his speed bubble, but not the bouncer. Right fine precision on his part. That little pedestal had a name manifest on it.
I think you gave up too easily on getting in the ordinary way.
Our names are on here, in a column of people specifically to be kept out. Wouldn't have mattered how well you argued.
What?
Marisie shoved up beside him.
Damn, I saved his life, the bastard!
Marisie, you're starting to talk normal-like.
Because of you, bastard.
You saved the governor's life, yeah, but it's probably his security who wants to keep you out, not him. They've got mud on their faces because one of their own went rotten, and you embarrassed them by noticing first.
But that's petty! They're playing with the governor's life!
Men are petty.
Wayne glanced over the lists again, recognizing a name.
Here now, that one will work.
Wayne, you're going to get us into trouble, aren't you?
Only if we get caught. They have 2 lists. People there to turn away no matter what, and people there to allow. See the notes? 4th name down, says he sent word he might not come, and they're to make certain nobody else uses his invitation.
Wayne, that's Professor Hanlonays. He's a brilliant mathematician.
From the university?
No, from New Seren. He's been behind some of the discoveries in combustion technology.
From outside the city, so people might not know him.
They will by reputation.
But personally?
He's somewhat reclusive. He often gets invited to things like this, but rarely comes. Wayne, I see that look in your eye. You can't imitate him.
What's the worst that could come of it?
We get caught. We get thrown in prison, prosecuted for conspiracy, embarrass Waxillium.
Wayne strode back to where he'd been standing when he'd sped up time.
Now that is the best damn argument for trying this that anyone could make. Come back so I can drop this speed bubble. After that, we're gonna need to find us some weapons.
Marisi paled, joining him.
If you are thinking of sneaking guns in...
Not guns. A different kind of weapon. Math.
So, that Chandra is in here. Somewhere.
Still holding Wax's arm, Steris scanned the party room. The penthouse of Zobel Tower encompassed its entire top floor, with windows ringing the outside. Light from a dozen dim chandeliers played off wine glasses, diamond jewelry, sequins on sleek dresses. The dress style was new. Was he so oblivious to fashion that he had missed such a dramatic shift? Steris wore more traditional attire, a kind of gauzy, draping white dress with a very small bustle and a distinct waist. However, it had sequins lining the collar and cuffs, and was more filmy, lighter than what she normally wore, and actually quite pretty on her. With the sequins, it shared something with these modern gowns. The party attendees moved around several bars and numerous small displays set up on the red-carpeted floor. Wax and Steris passed one, a stand with a glass box enclosing a raw copper nugget as big as a man's head. Light glimmered on its surface. Alimentic metals, dozens of specimens, with plaques talking about where the nugget or vein had been mined. They provoked conversations around the room, clusters of people chatting as light played off the colorful drinks in their fingers.
You're drawing attention. I'm not certain wearing the coat was a wise move.
The mist coat is a symbol. It is a reminder.
She'd talked him out of the hat, but not this.
It makes you look like a ruffian.
It's supposed to. Maybe they'll think twice about lying to me. I don't want to be part of their games.
You are already part of their games, Lord Waxillium.
Which is why I don't like coming to the parties.
Wax held up his hand, cutting her off.
I know. It's important that we be here. Let's go chat with the partygoers you've planned for us to approach.
No.
No?
That is what we commonly do.
Steris gave a specific smile, she practiced different ones, to Lady Mulgrave as they passed.
Tonight's purpose is yours. Let us be about it and find that killer.
Are you certain?
Yes.
She waved to another couple.
It behooves a wife to be interested in, if not involved in, the passions of her spouse.
You don't need to do that, Steris.
Please, I do.
Wax let the argument drop. Truth was, he was pleased. With the possibility that Bleeder was here somewhere, Wax wouldn't be able to relax anyway. So, how to find the creature? More importantly, how would he beat someone who could move in a blur? Unlike allomancy, which burned at a few standard rates, ferrochemical powers could be used up all at once. Bleeder could drain her metal mines in a single burst of speed and could probably take down dozens of people in an eye blink, maybe even hundreds. And Wax wouldn't be able to do a thing. But perhaps she wouldn't have enough left for that. She couldn't just pop more metal in like an allomancer and refill her reserves. She'd have to rely on what speed she had been able to store up, and she'd only stolen her spike recently. Killing the people at Winsting's party would have expended a large amount of what she'd theoretically been able to save up over the last few weeks. So he had two options. Kill her before she moved, or somehow get her to waste her ferrochemical reserve without hurting anyone. He stepped up to the bar, ordering drinks, then turned to scan the crowd. It had been 2 decades since he'd been a part of high society, and his 2 years back in Ellendale hadn't yet polished off all the rust. Everyone here had the same counterfeit way about them. They chatted with a studied air of merriment while secretly pursuing their own agendas. There was no better place for a murderer to blend in than this. Drinks in hand, Wax stepped down from the bar and turned on his steel bubble. It wasn't something he'd always been able to do, and he wasn't entirely certain how he did it. Oh, the basic mechanics were obvious. He burned steel, then pushed lightly outward from himself in all directions at once. But how had he learned to exempt metal he himself carried? He still didn't know. It was just something that had happened over time. With the bubble on, his alimentic instincts searched out any bits of metal moving quickly toward him, and would push on those with increasing force as they drew closer. He was getting better and better at that. Standing and letting Darians shoot at his chest while wearing about 12 inches of padding and armor had helped. He couldn't dodge bullets, but the bubble helped.
What did you just do? My bracelet wants to leap off my arm.
Remove it. If there's an allomantic fight, I don't want you wearing any medals.
Steris raised an eyebrow, but took off the bracelet and dropped it in her handbag. Wax mentally added an exception for it.
I don't know that it will matter. This place is positively teeming with metal. What are you doing with your drink?
Wax looked up. He'd just finished covertly dumping a bit of brown powder into his cup.
I got water. The powder will make it look like I'm drinking brandy. If I can feign drunkenness later, it might give me an edge.
Fascinating.
They moved through the room, passing under a chandelier. The separate bits of crystal, which had wires suspending them, moved subtly away from Wax, like the needle of a compass confronted by a magnet's matching pole. He accidentally knocked a nugget off a pedestal as they passed.
Rusts.
Against his better judgment, he dampened his steel bubble.
Let's find the governor.
Wax nodded. He couldn't shake the feeling that no matter which way he turned, someone had a gun pointed at his back.
Someone else moves us, lawman.
Red on the bricks. Lessie in his arms, already dead. His hands stained with her blood. No, he'd moved past that. He'd grieved. He wouldn't be sucked down into that spiral again. As they continued through the party, a pair of lesser nobles wearing dark colors moved to intercept them. But Wax gave them a glare, which was enough to get them to back off.
Lord Waxillium?
What? You said we were going to the governor.
That doesn't mean you can growl at everyone else.
I didn't growl.
Let me handle it next time.
Steris guided them around a pedestal displaying, oddly, nothing at all. The plaque read, Atium, the Lost Metal. As they neared the governor, who stood holding court near the windows on the north side, a man in a bright yellow bow tie noticed Wax. Great. Lord Stennet. He would want to talk about textile tariffs again. But of course he wouldn't say that, not at first. People never said what they meant around here.
Lord Waxillium, I was just thinking about you.
How are your wedding arrangements proceeding? Should I look forward to an invitation soon?
Not too soon. We've only just settled on a priest. What of you? Your engagement is the talk of the city.
Oh, now, about that, I... Oh, is that Lord... Ah, it is. I'm sorry, but I must be going. Bye.
What was that about?
He's been cheating on her. Naturally, the topic makes him uncomfortable.
Nice work. You're very good at this.
I'm proficient at it.
I believe that's what I said.
There is a distinction. In this room, there are true masters of social interaction. I am not one of them. I studied social norms, researched them, and now I execute them. Another woman might have sailed through that conversation and left him happy but distracted. I had to use blunt force, so to speak.
You are a bizarre woman, Steris.
Says the only man in the room with guns on his hips. A man who is unconsciously trying to push the earrings out of the ears of every woman we pass. You didn't notice Lady Remen losing her ring into her drink, did you?
Missed that.
Pity. It was entertaining. Here, step this way. We don't want to get into a conversation with Lord Booker's. He is dreadfully boring.
Wax followed her down three steps, passing a display shining with nuggets of tin, alongside pictures of famous Tin Eyes, including several sketches of the Lord Mistborn, who had been a Tin Eye before the Catasandra. Funny that Steris would remark on someone being boring.
You're thinking that it is ironic that I would note that someone is a bore, as I myself have a reputation for the same personality flaw.
I would not have phrased it like that.
It's all right. As I have said many times before, I am aware of my reputation. I must embrace my nature. I recognize another bore as you might recognize a master allomancer, as a colleague whose arts I don't particularly wish to sample.
Wax found himself smiling. Steris steered them toward where the governor was speaking with the lord of House Erikel.
As a side note, if you do find the murderer, steer me in her direction. I shall endeavor to fascinate her with details of our house finances. With luck, she'll fall asleep in her drink and drown, and I shall have my first kill.
Steris, that was actually amusing.
She blushed. Then she got a conspiratorial look on her face.
I cheated, if you must know.
Cheated?
I know you enjoy witty conversation, so I prepared earlier, writing myself a list of things I could say that you would find engaging.
You have plans for everything, don't you?
I like to be thorough. Though admittedly, sometimes I can be so thorough that I end up needing to plan how to best make my plans. My life ends up feeling like a beautiful ship in dry dock, built with 18 rudders pointing in different directions to be extra certain that a steering mechanism is in place. Yes, that quip was on my list.
Stairs, I think this is the most genuine I've ever seen you.
But I'm being fake. I prepared the lines ahead of time. I'm not actually being diverting.
You'd be surprised at how many people do the same thing. Besides, this is you, so it's genuine.
Then I'm always genuine.
I guess so. I just didn't realize it before.
They stepped toward Innate, putting them close enough that the governor would notice them waiting. Nearby, other couples and groups shot them covert looks. As the lord of a major house, Wax outranked most everyone in the room. Old, noble titles were coming to matter less and less, but with Steris's money backing him, he'd be able to dig himself out of many of his debts. That, in turn, had allowed him to avoid foreclosures, and he'd been able to hold out until other investments came through. House Ladrian was again one of the wealthiest in the city. Increasingly, that was more important than a noble pedigree. He found it unfortunate, though not surprising, how often noble birth aligned with economic and political power. The Lord Mistborn's laws, based upon the last emperor's ideal, were supposed to put power into the hands of common men, and yet the same groups just kept on ruling. Wax was one of them. How guilty should he feel?
Already I fear I've made things too easy for men.
Drim, the governor's chief bodyguard and head of security, stepped up to Wax.
I suppose you'll be next. My men at the doors let you keep your guns, I hear.
Let me tell you, Drim. If the governor is in the slightest bit of danger, you want a gun in my hands.
I suppose. A gun doesn't mean much to you anyway, does it? You could kill with the spare change in your pocket.
Or a pair of cufflinks. Or the tacks holding the carpet to the floor.
Too bad about your deputy.
Wayne? What about him?
He's a security threat. Had to turn him away down below.
Oh. All right, then.
Drim smiled, obviously feeling he'd won something from the conversation. He backed up to take his place by the wall, watching those who came to speak with the governor.
You're not concerned about Wayne?
Not anymore. I worried he'd find the party so boring he would wander off. Instead, the good man there kindly gave Wayne a challenge.
So you're saying he'll sneak in?
If Wayne isn't in here somewhere already, I'll eat your handbag and try to burn it for allomantic power.
They continued to wait. The governor's current interlocutor, Lady Shayna, was a long-winded blowhard, but after the political and financial support she'd given him, even the governor couldn't turn her away. Wax looked around, wondering where Wayne would be.
Lord Waxilium Ladrian, I've heard about you. You're more handsome than the stories say.
He raised his eyebrows toward the speaker, a tall woman waiting to see the governor. Very tall. She had a few inches on him, at least. With luscious lips and a large chest, she had creamy skin and hair the color of gunpowder, and she was wearing a red dress, missing most of its top half.
I don't believe we've met.
The woman didn't bother to look at Steris, but inspected Wax up and down, then smiled in a mysterious way.
Lord Waxilium, you wear sidearms and a rough-style mist coat to a cocktail party. Bold?
There is nothing bold about doing what one has always done.
You have an interesting reputation. Are the things they say about you true?
Yes.
She pursed her lips, smiling, expecting more. Instead, he met her eyes and waited. She shuffled, moving her cup from one hand to another.
Anyway, I don't want to monopolize all your time.
Wow. And they say I can make people uncomfortable.
You learn the stare early.
Wax returned his attention to the governor. In the back of his mind, he assessed the woman Melan and decided to keep an eye on her. Had that been Bleeder in disguise, trying to feel him out? Or had it been just another foolish partygoer with a bit too much wine in her and an inflated opinion of how men would respond to her?
Rusts, this is going to be tough.
Wayne sauntered about the party, his tiny dining plate stacked with food as high as he could get it. Why did they always use such tiny plates at fancy parties? To keep people from eating too much? Rusts. Rich folk didn't make sense. They gave away the most expensive booze in the city, then worried about people eating all of the little sausages? Wayne was a rebel. He refused to play by their rules. Yes, he did. He quickly laid out a battle plan. The ladies with the little sausages came out from behind the east bar, while the West Bar was preparing the salmon crackers, tiny sandwiches to the north, and desserts of various sorts to the south. If he made a round of the penthouse room in exactly 13 minutes, he could hit each station just as the servants were entering with fresh platters. They were starting to give him glares. A fellow knew he was doing his job right when he got those kinds of glares. Marcy stayed nearby, playing the part of Professor Hanlanese's assistant. Wayne scratched at his beard. He didn't like beards, but Marcy said the few Ivanotype pictures of Professor Hanlanese showed him wearing one. Hanlanese was far thicker at the waist than Wayne was, too. That was great. You could hide all kinds of stuff in padding like that.
I still can't believe you had all of this in the carriage.
Marcy leaned in and stole one of his sausages, right off his plate. Outrageous. Wayne scratched his head where he wore a colorful terrace cap, a proud emblem of Hanlanese's lineage.
My dear woman, being a qualified academic depends before anything else upon suitable preparation. I would no sooner leave my home without appropriate equipment for every eventuality than I would work in my lab without proper safety precautions.
It's the voice that truly makes the disguise, you know. How do you do it?
Our accents are clothing for our thoughts, my dear. Without them, everything we say would be stripped bare, and we might as well be screaming at one another. Oh, look, the dessert lady has chocolate pastries again. I do find those irresistible.
Professor Hanlanese?
Wayne froze.
Why, it is you. I didn't believe you'd actually come.
A tall man approached, wearing so much plaid that you could have strung him up on a pole and made a war banner out of him. On one hand, Wayne was pleased. He'd only had Marcy's description of Hanlanese to go on in creating his disguise, so the fact that he fooled someone who had obviously seen the professor's picture was impressive. On the other hand, damn. Wayne handed Marcy his plate, giving her a stern glare that said, "Don't eat these." Then he took the newcomer's hand. That suit's fabric really was something. The mill that made it must have used up an entire year's quota of stripes.
And you are...
I'm Rom Maldor.
The man shook Wayne's hand.
You know, the paper on the Higgins effect?
Yes.
Wayne released the hand and stepped back. He gave a good impression of being nervous around so many people, and it sold better than two-penny drinks the day after Truefest. Indeed, Maldor was perfectly willing to give the supposed recluse plenty of space. That let Wayne speed up time around him and Marcy only.
What in Harmony's wrist is he talking about?
From her bag, Marcy retrieved the book that she'd purchased at a nearby shop while Wayne was getting into his costume. She soon found the page she wanted.
The Higgins effect has to do with the way a spectral field is influenced by magnets. Here, try this.
She rattled off some gibberish to Wayne, who nodded and dropped the speed bubble.
The Higgins effect is old news. I'm much more interested in the way that a static electric field produces similar results. Why, you should see the work we are near to completing.
But I was going to study that effect myself.
Then you're behind by at least 3 years.
Why didn't you mention this in our letters?
And reveal my next discovery?
Wayne had never seen a scientist move so quickly. You'd have thought someone was handing out free lab coats in the lobby.
Oh, dear. You realize the chaos this might cause in their field?
Wayne took his plate of food back.
It'll be good for them. It'll stop them from sitting around and thinking so much.
Wayne, they're scientists. Isn't that their job?
Well, if I know. But rusts, if it is, that would explain so much.
Governor Innate finished his conversation and turned toward Wax. Drim, the bodyguard, waved them forward. He didn't like Wax, but from what Wax knew of the man, Drim was solid, loyal, and dependable. He understood that Wax wasn't a threat. Unfortunately, Drim didn't know the threat they were facing. A Chandra. It could be anyone. Wax wouldn't have been so trusting.
Wouldn't I?
Wax shook the governor's hand.
What if the Chandra is Drim? Have I considered that?
That was how Bleeder had gotten in to kill Lord Winsting, after all. She had been wearing the face of someone Winsting's men trusted.
Rusting iron on a hillside. This is going to be very, very hard.
Lord Waxillium, are you well?
I'm sorry, my lord. My thoughts were called away for a moment. How is Lady Innate?
She had a moment of passing nausea and went home to lie down. I will tell her you asked after her.
The governor kissed Steris's hand.
Lady Harms, you look lovely this evening.
And you are ever a gentleman.
Steris gave him a genuine smile. Steris liked the governor, though politically they were opposites. Steris, calculatedly progressive, as she figured would be expected of new money looking to advance, while Innate was conservative. But that sort of thing didn't bother Steris. She liked people whose motives made sense, and she felt Innate's political record was orderly.
I hope Lady Alry will recover soon.
It is an ailment of nerves, more than anything else. She did not react well to what happened today.
You seem to be doing remarkably, all things considered.
The would-be assassin was one of our newer guards and was mentally unhinged. He had terrible aim and likely didn't even actually intend to kill me. Would that the survivor would always send such enemies to me, and often around election season.
Wax cracked a forced smile, then glanced to the side. That woman from before, the pretty one with the large eyes, stood nearby. Who else was suspiciously near?
Bleeder won't be someone I can spot easily.
What is your take on it, Lord Waxillium? What were the man's motives?
He was provoked to the attack. It was a distraction. Someone else killed your brother. They will try again for you.
Nearby, Drim looked up straight, glancing at him.
Curious. But you're known for jumping at shadows, are you not?
Every lawman follows a bum lead on occasion.
I believe you'll find Lord Waxillium to be right far more often than he is wrong, my lord. If he warns of danger, I would listen.
I will.
I want to meet with you so we can discuss important matters. Tomorrow, at the latest. You need to hear what we're dealing with.
I will schedule it.
From Innate, that was a promise. Wax would have his meeting.
Lady Harms, might I ask after your cousin? I have yet to thank her for what she did today, even if the man's aim was off and I would have been safe anyway.
Marcy is well. She should be coming up here tonight.
Look at them. They dress in painted sequins. They drink wine. They laugh and smile and play and dance and eat and quietly kill. All part of Harmony's plan. All actors on a stage. That's what you are too, Waxillium Ladrian. It's what all men are.
A chill moved over Wax. He was still wearing his earring. Bleeder had found out how to communicate with someone wearing a hemallergic spike. The murderer was in his head.